Good evening, and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, coming to you as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight's special guest here on blogtalkradio.com/cycles is Monty Taylor, Jungian astrologer and mythologist. Monty Taylor takes us on an adventure of inner voyage where astrology and the wisdom of mythology meet the perspectives of legendary psychologist Carl Jung to show us that our current lives are unfolding according to our own perspectives of what we think of as actual reality. In short, it is a search to find the answers within ourselves. Monty brings more than 40 years of applied practice to the art of understanding the psychological applications of astrological influences on individuals, companies, countries, and cultures. Metaphysics is really just quantum physics poetically expressed. The arts are the doorway to higher consciousness. The way our lives mirror our understanding of how we are actualizing our authentic sense of self is the key to charting the course of discovering our own magnificence. Monty says to use the statistical cycles of time in a meaningful and practical way can help us better understand the normal stages of personal and collective evolution. He says this well on his own radio program, Living Consciously. It's on every Monday at 12 noon until 1 p.m. New York time. And you can find Talking Consciously at TalkingAlternative.com. Once on TalkingAlternative.com, look for Living Consciously and look for Monty's site on the web named MontyTaylor.com. And here, tonight's special guest is Monty Taylor. Hello, Monty. Are you there?
With you this evening.
Oh, Monty, yeah, I just clicked you in. I'm sorry. Yes, we are connected now, are we not?
All we right, are indeed. Thank you for the wonderful intro.
Hey, I just want to let our listeners know, I see one caller has already called in. We're going to be taking calls here in a little bit, and for others who want to join in the discussion, it's going to be area code 347-884-9593. That's 347-884-9593. Monty, you're getting popular before we even started, so I wanted to stop and get that note out there. The board's already lighting up. Monty, hi. I've heard you many times on A Better World. And you've been a guest of Mitchell Rabin on A Better World Radio. People can find this on abetterworld.tv. He also has a television program. So, Monty, where are we in the world of astrology?
Well, we're in the middle of a perfect storm of evolutionary change. The interesting thing is, as you know, planetary cycles, they go round and round and round. And sometimes the same configuration that triggers, you see, astrology, in my opinion, doesn't really cause things. It triggers. It's like a timetable. It's a unit of measurement. Just like colorhythms. Which I think you do such wonderful work on that subject, and it really is totally related to cosmic astrology. So where we are right now is we are having, generally speaking, the same astrological patterns seen from the Earth, three of them, major ones, the one that caused the American, French, and Industrial Revolution, the one that caused the Civil War, just look at the country, yeah. And the one that triggered the 1929 stock market crash and completely reinvented the economy.
We're having them all at once. A confluence of similar patterns now?
Pardon?
This is a confluence of similar patterns happening all at once?
Yeah, it's a total confluence of these three planetary returns.
Mm-hmm. About how long will this perfect storm last?
Until about 2023.
Indeed. Now, how far are we into this storm, Monty?
About 4 or 5 years.
And does it peak in the middle, or is it worse at the beginning? How can this progress with
all
of these factors?
Well, it's kind of like a roller coaster. You will find peaks and valleys between now and 2023 when life will be very, very different. And, you know, like Eckhart Tolle says in the Book of Now, the future is composed of a string of nows. lived consciously, and my show's called Living Consciously, being aware, really, because more, you know, I'm a big fan of Carl Jung. I study at the Institute. I lecture at the UN on a lot of his work. And, you know, I've learned that we don't really see things as they are. We see what we believe.
We do.
Projection. Mm-hmm.
It is projection, because we often see what we expect to see, and what we expect to see is our own reflection. And we most sometimes don't even understand ourselves that well, so the looking for the wrong thing with the wrong image of it sometimes.
That's why the magic lies within. That's why Jung was a very good astrologer himself, you know, and he did charts on his most important clients. One thing your listeners might be interested in is that the founding fathers, you know, were Freemasons, most of them.
Yes, they were.
And at that time, a lot of the things we take for granted now that we can find in Barnes & Noble bookstore or on Amazon were really quite esoteric, secret knowledge, you know. It was considered a cult. Well, people might be interested to know that one of the crackerjack astrologers of the 18th century was Benjamin Franklin.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. As was Paul Revere, as was George Washington, as was Thomas Jefferson.
Irony, and people don't like astrology because it isn't traditional. They don't like to depart from traditional, and yet the tradition of our founding fathers was to use it.
Yes, because you see, they were all avant-garde. They were all very strongly into Aquarian energy. It's not that they were born in the sign of Aquarius, but this triggering. You see, the planet that rules the sign Aquarius was discovered in 1748.
Mm-hmm.
And the discovery of that, they say in esoteric astrology that when the human collective consciousness is ready to go to the next level, it will physically discover a planet that embodies that thought frequency or brainwave.
You fractal that down, they say on an individual, when the student is ready, the master will appear.
Exactly.
I guess when the consciousness is ready, the heavenly body appears.
Yeah, the triggers that will amplify and broadcast those frequencies will be there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. See, Uranus rules electricity and it rules nuclear energy. Can you imagine if they discovered that planet during the Crusades?
Not good.
Exactly. So to everything, there's a time and place. Ecclesiastes had a lot of wisdom in it.
Yes, indeed. There is a time and a place in everything. There's going to be a time and a place for questions coming up at quarter past the hour. We're 8 minutes past the hour now. We've got a couple of callers already. Moni, if you don't mind, I think that what we're going to do is just take them intermittently here and there. But tell us a little bit more. What is the planetary alignment that has given us a confluence? Is it because so many planets are in a particular position, or is it various ones throughout all of our planets here?
Well, if we look at the sky like we look at a kaleidoscope. Now let's just look at the structure of a kaleidoscope. A kaleidoscope changes and gives you infinite patterns and designs, but nothing inside the kaleidoscope ever changes. No new little crystals are discovered, none leave. They're all there all the time. They just change patterns, and that's what's happening. So on many different levels, the big thing that you're going to see immediately in your face and has been in our face since 2008 is a stress or challenging aspect between the outer planets. Now, the further away the planet is from the Earth, it is said the more it affects the collective than it does the individual.
Uh-huh.
And the further away the planet is, such as the outer planets are Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And these planets in the individual life stream or individual chart, they work inwardly and very deep in the psyche. They are the planet of crisis or exaltation, depending on how much stuck energy you have when they happen to go over some of your natal planets. So squaring, you know, this 90-degree stress aspect between Pluto and Uranus, their outer planets, transformation and innovation, are challenging each other. Now, add to that the fact that the planet Neptune has just returned and entered the sign of Pisces for the first time in 165 years.
Yeah.
Now, the last time when we began that cycle, we had the Civil War, again, just look at the country, And we also had unbelievable chemical discoveries. We discovered photography, which is a chemical process. We discovered all of the anesthetics. We discovered film, moving pictures. We discovered all of these things. And back in those days, everybody's, you know, grandmother was making up the spring tonic full of opium and laudanum and everything else you could think of.
Yeah.
Shortly after, Coca-Cola, which was based on cocaine,
was
invented in Atlanta. And so... You're seeing an
and
awful
Britain
lot of
was
things.
Shipping, opium to the Orient, and
oh,
the
definitely.
Orient was giving, you know, tea to the English, but they were giving the opium back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now you see an economic application of those phenomena, because you see, free will is paramount, but free will is only as good as your awareness, and that's the purpose of astrology.
Hmm.
Indeed. It makes you aware of where you are. You know, the word zodiac is the Greek word for wheel of animals. It's where we get the merry-go-round. So
okay.
If you look at what we think of as linear time, it's really a merry-go-round with things coming back to where they were at one time.
And this is something we have to catch up to, because the contemporary Western thought is to think of things as just a string of, you know, sequences, cause and effect,
mm-hmm.
in the world of physical causality, and they don't really see that there's a cyclical nature in there.
Of course. Everything is a cycle. Mm-hmm.
We are
Definitely.
Coming to that. Has there been a time in any kind of recent eras that such a confluence of transformational and upheavals were going on in the world anywhere comparable to what we're seeing now?
Well, yes, but they were more regionalized. I mean, we had little things such as the Russian Revolution, World War II, World War I, the Great Economic Depression. These were all triggered by astrological phenomena. They were
Indeed.
Not caused. You see, a moving planet around an object, let's say the natal chart of the United States, or a person, or anything, when a planet is moving around what we call transiting planets, where they are today, when they touch a certain natal position in someone's chart,
mm-hmm.
what they do is they trigger a potential that's in the chart. They trigger and mm-hmm. release stuck energy, or they will energize something. It's an extraordinary phenomenon.
So there's an influence. It has a tendency to exist. We can't look at the mathematics of motion and come up with a crystal ball prediction of what's happening, but we can see where the influences are, and it's up to us to react or respond as we will.
Totally, just like the weather forecasts. A forecaster says it's going to rain. The predictor will say you're going to get wet. Well, not if you know it's going to rain.
Ah, that's
true. And that's what astrology does.
Very good analogy.
Gives
that.
You a choice. See, so many people think that astrology takes away your free will. No, it enhances your free will.
Yes, it does. I mean, we take our ships to the seas. We're full of ocean currents and trade winds, and yet we
mm-hmm.
navigate where we intend to go.
Yes.
But we must interact with these cycles to do so.
Absolutely. It's called navigation.
And we can navigate, but it's better to know what the waters are, or else we'll be led astray and not know how to respond. So if we can understand the invisible currents in time, as well as we
mm-hmm.
can see them when they're physically manifest, we're going to realize that we are the sails being moved by the invisible winds of society, of astrology.
We are indeed. That's why my two favorite myths in all of the Greek, you know, the Greeks were a very brilliant culture. They didn't believe in gods running around in the sky. These were allegories and symbols of the human psyche.
Yeah.
Anyway, the bottom line, what you were just saying about navigating, my two favorite myths are Jason and the Argonauts, which is about man's search for his outward quest, the Golden Fleece. My other favorite is the Odyssey, where Ulysses, or Odysseus, is trying now, after achieving his great victories and his triumphs, he's trying to get home again. So the journey outward towards your quest and your journey homeward after you've achieved it are both equally difficult.
Huh. And, you know, before we go to the phones, predominantly where the perfect storm is right now, is it
mm-hmm.
rolling us outward or leading us inward? Or
yes,
is it
both. Simultaneous,
oh, that's
always.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's spherical.
Now, how can that work together? Does that mean that we're in conflict, or can we look within to make the right decisions before we act? How can that work?
If you have conflict, you are simply coming across some stuck energy or a wrong frequency to achieve what you're trying to do. And that causes you to make a course correction.
And it would be unwise of us to resist a natural flow of things, so better we understand what the influences are.
Absolutely.
And you've done such a study of history that you can understand that when you have positions such as this, it influences in this way, and this is exactly how it manifests according to history. So we get an understanding not of actual prediction, but an influence that we're in right now.
Right. And you can take some of the, for example, this Pluto return that triggered all of this change and total transformation in the United States government, etc.
Yeah.
You can go back every 248 years, and like clockwork, you will find a world-changing historical event. I did a table of them that I use in lectures. You can go back two Pluto returns from now, back ago, and you had the Protestant Revolution, for example. That rather left a rather permanent change. You go back further, you have Galileo. You go back further, you have the Renaissance. You go back further, all the way back to the fall of Rome. They happen in perfect cycles.
There you
are.
Cycles of change, and it is consistent, a confluence of many, many cycles right in our own solar system. We have astrological cycles, cycles of our country and world history, cycles within us because we have biorhythms. Like to take a call. We got a caller here from area code 305. Folks, if you want to call in, it's area code 347-884-9593. Okay, caller from area code 305. Hi, you're on the air with us. Hello, can you hear us? I don't think we're connected
here.
Hello?
Oh, hi.
Hello?
There we are.
Hi. You're on the air with
this
Monty.
This is Diane Collins in Miami. Hi, Monty.
Hello, Diane.
My question is I'm a student of astrology, very amateur. For many years, and when we have these, what you call a perfect storm right now,
right,
and we have a return of what appears to be a return of, you know, similar to the planetary positions when all of those upheavals happen, but isn't it, in my training and in what I feel myself, is that I love the way you say it, Monty. It's an activation. It's not a prediction. It's that the planets return to see what we've learned so that we can, from those past cyclical times, so that we can put in place from a higher awareness, awakened consciousness, what we didn't perhaps know well enough then, it's now up to us to put that in. What do you think about that, Monty?
I think that is bullseye accurate. And the trick is, you have to know what happened when the planet was last where it is now. Now, for example, you can take a very fast-moving planet like Mars. It goes all the way around the zodiac every 2 years, okay? And if you go back 2 years and 2 years and 2 years, you can start seeing what happened more or less every 2 years. How did that express itself, that triggering of energy, you see, about moving forward? And when you're trying to move forward in your block, you get conflict. That's why Mars is so associated with war and conflict. He was really designed to be a pioneering planet, but don't get in his way. Now, Mercury goes around the mental body every 88 days, Venus every year and a half, the Moon every 28 days, the Sun once a year. Okay, so now the last time, let's take one of the outer planets, those big change agents, those big boys, and Uranus was really stirring up the waters between 1929 until about 1935, when we had the Great Depression and we had the entire collapse of a house of cards. Well, exactly, it lines up with 2008 perfectly, when everybody realized that nothing was worth anything anymore because it was never worth anything to begin with. So now if people had only learned what they had done, and they got into this bubble, and you see this term used in economics all the time, the housing bubble, the dot-com bubble. Well, this is unwisely used Jupiter energy, which goes around the chart every 12 years. But you can go back every 12 years from today and see where Jupiter was. You see, it would be in Gemini. So Gemini, it's expanding communications. It's expanding. But when you expand without appropriate foundation, you collapse. Just as if you overemphasize the planet Saturn, which is structure and foundation and conservatism and things like that, when that is out of balance with Jupiter, you get restriction. So you get suppressed thought. You get instances like Galileo being brought up before the Inquisition for daring to say that the sun was the center of the solar system. You see, Saturn, on its lower, every planet, every single planet and every sign, a sign is a constellation or astrological environment, like Alaska and Hawaii. The planet is like a character traveling through those environments. Okay, so what you have is, it's just talking to us, you see, it's so simple. The status quo, which is the lower octave, every planet has a lower octave and a higher octave. And where your consciousness is as an individual or a collective culture will resonate with the higher or lower or mid-level resonance of a particular mythological symbol. So let's just take Saturn. The lower octave of Saturn is the status quo above all. The fundamentalist view of life, that everything's been discovered and let's make it all conform to a set of rules and regulations. Well, Uranus just loves to go and smash that all to pieces. Pluto will come and completely transform it and bury it so that you can find it again archaeologically. You know, planetary returns, your natal chart never dies. You do. But, like, for example, I said Pluto takes 248 years to go around. Well, certain people, such as Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, were born about 248 years ago, okay? Mm. Now, they died many, many, many years ago. But 248 years after their birth, Pluto came around and started revealing secrets. Do you remember about 10 or 12 years ago, they had that big family reunion in Staten Island of all the hundreds of descendants of Thomas Jefferson that were illegitimate and some were by slaves, et cetera, et cetera? And remember, countries have charts. Corporations have charts. You see, you can really be quite a cosmic sleuth and detective. It's Sherlock Holmes astrology, I call it. But anyway, I hope I didn't go too much off a tangent there with your question.
Let me just ask one adjunct question then. Mm-hmm. Would you say now, with Pluto in Capricorn, which is about structure, I know, and with Saturn in Scorpio right now,
right.
that
mm-hmm.
it's asking us as a humanity to restructure, as you said during the 1929 was one of the repeats of now, we could restructure the financial system,
uh-huh.
Financial relationships, and so instead of just waiting to see, oh my God, you know, what have the bankers done or what has Wall Street
uh-huh.
done, whatever, that we start putting some new thinking into this in real, I feel the way you do. I'm like a dot compared to what you know astrologically, but I think it's a very, very important subject for all of us to learn. And I think that right now, would you say it's a time where we have to proactively start thinking, if you know those planets, I'm asking you if that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
To start thinking about, well, how might we as a society start to creatively restructure our financial system rather than waiting for it to collapse and then being pushed against the wall to have to do something about it.
Good question, Monty.
That's what computer language has taught us. Living by default. If you don't make a choice, you have something happen by default, right? It goes to a certain thing. All right. So now what you've just
described.
Anyway,
thank you so much. But
my pleasure, Diane.
I'm still listening.
You're talking about Pluto being in Capricorn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're talking about Pluto being in Capricorn. Now, Pluto is transformation. It transforms. Sometimes renovation begins with destruction, doesn't it? If you're remodeling a house, you have a mess for the first few months of plaster dust and everything, but eventually, if you handle things right, you have a wonderful, renovated, rejuvenated structure. Okay? Now, Saturn, which rules structure, happens to right now be in Scorpio, ruled by Pluto, and that's the sign of renovation. So structures are going under total renovation. And one interesting thing about Pluto, when it goes through a sign, the changes that it triggers are permanent because they go to the very foundation of things. And Pluto, the transformer, is in the sign Capricorn, which happens to rule government and corporations. And can you really tell the difference these days, who is who? So that is going to be very much the forefront of the human consciousness. So when two planets like Saturn structure is in the sign of transformation, and the planet Pluto, the planet of transformation, is in the sign of structure, you call that mutual reciprocity. Two planets are in each other's sign. And that is an opportunity, and to simplify what you said, well, what didn't we do the last time this mess happened? What did we fail to do? How did we overlook things? What did we fail to look ahead and see what we were doing? You see, it's just exactly like another thing. When Pluto was back there in the 1930s, didn't we have the Dust Bowl out there in the prairies? Well, then they finally figured out something called crop rotation, which had been around for thousands of years, but they realized they had exhausted the soil. So where are we exhausting our resources? Where are we not allowing natural rejuvenation and balance to happen? The source of all power is balance, not aggression.
And now it's global, isn't it, Monty? It's not just
very
regional.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to clean up the oceans and hopefully move forward with this. Now, what do you see with the enmeshment of government and business? Do you see that they're going to continue to merge together, or are they going to differentiate in the centrifuge as we go forward? Because it's an important question as we look at how are we going to clean up the industrial mess we made.
Right. Well, it's a rather unholy alliance of government and corporation. It could be otherwise, but it isn't. But look back now again at how consistent astrology is. We are having the planetary Pluto return of the American Revolution. Now, look for just a moment about government and corporations. Who was the Boston Tea Party aimed at? It was aimed at an international corporation called the Dutch West Indies Company, right?
Mm, yeah.
It was about, and all of the wealthy members of parliament owned the government, and all of the particular investments they had in corporations were self-serving. And so what you really had was taxation and tariffs without representation. King George could care less about it. That's why he didn't think it was a big deal to lose the colonies. But the members of parliament who owned all those corporations, then they said, okay, well, if they secede and become a separate country, we'll just, you know, do business over there. And that's exactly what's happening again, isn't it?
Yes. And now we've become the empire that we once rebelled against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About 248.
We won't be after 2023.
Yes.
You see, what's happening astrologically is a global economy is seeking integration through evolution.
Yeah.
It's seeking. It's not going to be enforced and shoved down people's throat because it won't happen. Because now we have different technologies, don't we? Now we bring in Uranus, another outer planet who rules technology like cell phones and computers. So just like the Arab Spring and all of these other things, they were fueled by the Internet, weren't they?
Yes.
You see, the totalitarian positions and the censors had no power over the free access to information, and that's what's going to irrevocably be called the catalyst for this global economy to finally take place.
And it will facilitate it. You know, it's very interesting. You mentioned my work on collarithms. I do the cycles of nations and the global community, the larger set of cycles. And very briefly, I'm looking at the internal rhythms of society without looking at external forces, not looking at the physical bodies around us. And the conclusion that I came to is we're currently in a transitional crisis the likes of which you don't see for thousands of years.
Right.
Following that crisis, as we come out of it, then there's going to be a great standardization, unification, as we ascend up into a new age of reason, a new age of romanticism, while at the same time going inward or looking back physically, and that means cleaning up the industrial mess, while intellectually we're rising, and we're going to invent new ways to do that. And the emotional cycle rising up out of the Victorian era means that we're going to care more about thinking about the new ways, and this is all going to set new standards. So anyone who holds on to the past now is going to become part of it. The only thing to hold on to the past for now is to look back on how we can clean up what we did industrially. That's where the smart money lies.
Yes, that's where the planet Neptune, which for the first time in 165 years, remember, 165 years ago, we didn't have steamships and airplanes. We used sailing ships, okay?
Yeah.
Neptune rules oceans. Mm. Neptune rules the water element in the climate changes.
Yeah.
Neptune is going to be in Pisces for 15 years, and it is going to put the health of the oceans into the face of every man immediately, more and more with gradually intensified, coverage and consequences. See, Neptune also happens to rule natural gas. Look at all this fracking stuff going on.
Oh, my God.
You see?
And for folks,
Pluto
I think most of you know about it, but fracking is when they actually are pumping dangerous chemicals, which we are not allowed to know, deep into the earth to fracture layers of rock deep beneath the surface of the earth, because trapped in there is natural gas and whatnot, and then it can be forced up to the surface. And what they're putting underground, well, that could eventually wind up in underground streams and everything else, and it's horrendous. It's horrendous.
You know, David, the other thing that Neptune happens to rule, in addition to natural gas and water, it rules earthquakes. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and here we're pressurizing and fracturing rock, and sometimes not all that far away from fault lines.
Well, astrology suggests very strongly that not only are we coming into a new cycle of naturally caused earthquakes, but now it's being complicated by man-made causes of earthquakes. So you're going to see a real mess going on. Look at
not
the sinkholes in Florida.
Not a good time to do underground nuclear testing. Yeah.
Well, that's Pluto.
That's
Pluto. See, so Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus. Uranus, nuclear energy. Pluto is another nuclear energy planet. It rules anything subterranean. That's why it rules the underworld. See, all of these myths, they are very accurate allegories. They weren't superstitious little fantasies of pagans. They are allegories to show you how their stories, if you apply them properly, fit any age and any level of technology. It's extraordinary.
Absolutely right. And we have a tendency to look at things on the surface. So when we hear a metaphor or we look at ideograms and we see the figures and so forth, we go, oh, look at these primitive people. They're, you know, worshiping these concepts. And yet the people, as you said earlier, they don't conceive of them that way. And if you look at the gods of India, where you see Ganesh with the head of an elephant and the body of a man, nobody expected
symbolism.
To be walking
it's
around seeing something like that.
Of course.
Yes.
Just look at but you see, the older the civilization, the more intuitive it was. We sort of got away from and divorced the understanding of how to use intuition and collective consciousness. Remember back in those Indonesian tsunamis? They say that none of the animals and none of the indigenous people were even touched about it.
Yes.
A couple of days earlier, they went up to the higher ground.
Yes.
Isn't that extraordinary?
That is extraordinary. Now, is it because of astrological positions that we've wandered away from being aware on the subtle level and having the emotional intelligence that we did in greater times before?
Well, it's not because so much of astrological cycles. It's because we misused them. I've learned astrology has taught me that an overly developed virtue can become a vice. And so we got so much into linear left brain scientific thinking, because it started explaining a lot of what we knew intuitively, that we then turned off the intuition.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's what happened. Now we're coming back into the intuition, you see. You know, if you showed a cell phone to someone from the 1700s, they'd accuse you of witchcraft.
Yeah, you'd be talking into a stone and hearing voices
mm-hmm.
from far away.
Exactly. So they would think you were probably talking to demons, or that you were demented, or that you weren't really talking to anybody anyway. You see,
yes.
it's the technology fitting the time. Technology is always a result of mankind's readiness to use it. That doesn't mean he uses it well. The
yeah.
age of Aquarius is all about equality. And when you first start a new age, and we have indeed started into the... we're just on the border between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius. And Aquarius will be with us for about 2,300 years. But the lower octave of a sign usually shows first, because it's raw and undeveloped. So you usually get the lower octave. When you got into the first age of Pisces, what did you get? All that martyrdom and Christianity and, you know, war over faith and all of that stuff. It was not balanced, you see.
Yes.
Well, now that we're getting into Aquarius, the very first thing Aquarius wants in this brainwave in the cosmos is equality, but equality with respect to the individual. But what happened? We got, first and foremost, the Soviet kind of communism, where everyone was going around calling each other comrades.
Mm-hmm.
And then later we got, very shortly, we got the Chinese sense of communism under Mao Zedong, where not only did everyone call each other comrade, they all dressed alike.
That's absolutely right. And we had a redistribution of wealth under the Roosevelt administration here,
mm-hmm.
who was some described as a bit of a dictator.
Oh, yes, they called him the Bolshevik.
Yeah.
Yes, I've read old diaries about that. But you see, that was mankind knowing that there was a new energy there, but they weren't using it right.
Mm.
You see. So it's so often. We've discovered X-rays, but we didn't know how dangerous they were. You see, we discovered asbestos.
Yes.
And the lobbying corporations that produced asbestos caused local lawmaking bodies to pass laws that you had to have asbestos in all public buildings. And now we've
yes.
discovered it's so carcinogenic that now they have to raise even more money to take it out. And I'm sure there's a corporation behind that, too, servicing that need. You see, so it's, man, that's why Shakespeare said, Lord, what fools these mortals be. You come with something and you don't necessarily use it the right way.
Well, George Harrison said, with every mistake, we must surely be learning. So things, one thing about cycles is it's not everything going around in circles. We're also moving forward at the same time, so you can more or less think of it as a spiral. And a spiral
Here.
Is moving forward, kind of going up and down itself
mm-hmm.
in cycles and so forth. Now, are we reaching a critical mass where we're going to evolve into going away from survival of the fittest and going into survival of the wisest? Or what are we
we're
seeing?
We're going to go into a phase of the survival of the compassionate.
Mm.
And the compassionate is not the enabler. The compassionate is someone who understands why someone isn't choosing a lifestyle or a corporation or whatever that is healthy. And your idea of the spiral is absolutely perfect. It's one of the core metaphors I use in my classes and teachings. Is you see, planets keep going around in circles, right? So
yep.
it seems.
Yeah.
Well, a circle is a loop. Truth lies in the spiral. That's why the spiral is such a sacred geometric, you know, symbol. Now,
yes.
if every time one of these planets, let's say on your birthday, the sun comes back to where it was when you were born. That's like being back on that zodiac, the wheel of animals, the merry-go-round.
Yes.
A planet comes back to where it was when you were born. You have a chance to grab the brass ring of the reward of experience every time that happens.
Yes.
And if you do that, every time you come back to where you were, you're not going in a circle. You're taking a step upward every time you come. And if you take a step upward every time you go around in a circular motion, you're creating a spiral. Now, we have 12 planets that we know of that we use in everyday astrology. So you have 12-strand DNA spiraling in the human consciousness being mirrored emblematically through planetary transits.
A 12-strand DNA moving in the planets.
Mm-hmm.
That's a marvelous concept, Monty.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what DNA is all about. You see, and Pluto helped us discover that. It triggered us. See, it triggers things. It just triggers things. That's all it is. I once had a great compliment, a very famous Tibetan astrologer, asked to exchange readings with me. So she was very, very famous and elderly and whatnot, and she said, oh, so she did my chart. And, you know, all forms of astrology, they will say the same thing, but they'll say it in a very different way. But the bottom line is always the same. Well, anyway, she read my chart. And then I read her chart with our Western wheel of an astrological symbol. And she looked at it and she says, well, that was wonderful. She says, but there's one thing I think you should do in Western astrology. You should make a race just a little bit of the outside wheel so that the soul can escape the wheel of destiny. Mm-hmm. And I looked at her and I says, no. I said, lie this wheel down flat. And all these planets are going around and around and around. And every time they do, if you take a step upward, they're coming up off the page, up into the space above it, creating this evolutionary spiral of consciousness. And see, it's all poetry. That's why I say metaphysics is really quantum physics poetically expressed. That's my motto.
And we have to understand that, because it's the way that we can explain the inexplicable to ourselves and a chance to leap beyond logic and understanding where the mind will not go.
Most definitely. Logic has its limits.
Moni, I want to ask you about the great Platonic year of the zodiac. Now, I've heard some different figures on how long that is, but most often I hear it's 25,920 years long.
Yeah, we call that a great age.
Now, do you agree with that figure or that duration?
Yeah, it's more or less approximate. When anyone gives me some very specific number, I say, yeah, it's ballpark that, because we don't know how to measure it yet, quite frankly. That's what I say. But yes, you see, we have ages, and then we have great ages, or what you call the Platonic cycle. You see, an age is roughly 2,600 years, okay? So roughly. You know, it's like it doesn't snow on the first day of winter, does it? The calendar says it's winter, but you can get a different result. So we had the age of Pisces a little over 2,000 and something years. Now we're flowing into, we're on the cusp, the border of the age of Pisces going into the age of Aquarius. Aquarius is going to be with us between 2,300 and 2,600 years. But when you go all the way around the whole entire zodiac and combine all of those ages, that means our solar system has gone around the entire galactic center, you see, and that's 26,000 years, give or take.
Yes, my word. And what about the yugas spoken about by the great Sanskrit writings?
Well, yes, they had a very different system of measuring things, and there's enormous wisdom in that, but not everything works, and, you know, it's like one size does not fit all. You know, Westerners sometimes have a lot of trouble with Vedic or Eastern or the yugas and all of this astrology because, first of all, they don't use any of the outer planets. They only use up to the planet Saturn because that's in their culture and they're sticking to it. And they're very proud of the fact that they don't use those outer planets.
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying what is. So it's not going to give you the full three-dimensional, but yet at the same time, they were looking at recorded history. You see, all of these things we say about astrology, no one sat down and assigned a list of duties to all these planets. What they did was from thousands of years of observations, they, for example, noticed what happened when Mercury's in Pisces, what happened when Pluto was in Capricorn, what happened, and you start making an analysis of what happened, and then you realize, wow, now you can sort of, by looking backwards, you can look forward and expect the same kind of cycle, again, like colorhythms.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely true, and we're getting wise to the point of understanding that a little bit. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program with our guest, Monty Taylor. I've had the privilege of meeting in New York because of his frequent appearances on A Better World with Mitchell Rabin. You can find that on abetterworld.tv. And you can find Monty's site at montytaylor.com. So, Monty, you're saying that we're in a perfect storm, a confluence of cyclic positions with the heavenly bodies, the likes of which that have brought us revolutions and wars and so forth, with just when you would have one such storm. But we've got three such storms right now. It's going to be
three
lasting.
Big ones. Lots of small ones too.
So we're going to be going through this upheaval. We're going to be we got some forces that are drawing us inward. Other forces are drawing us outward. And this is going to last until about 2023. But
right.
then after that, we're going to have a calmer time navigating the tides of time, are we?
Well, you're just going to have better adjusted to the mutations of history that have happened that are going on right now.
Would you call
That's
this
really...
the birth of a new era?
Well, it's the triggering of a new chapter. Yes, it's a whole new era. Most definitely, it's just like sometimes changes are very dramatic. In the Russian Revolution, there was the aristocracy. They were there one day and gone the next, you see. But, you know, those planets kept going around and around. So that's when the Soviet Union got started, right?
Yeah.
Well, in 1991, those planets came around again. And one day the Soviet Union was there, and the next day it wasn't.
Yes, and
it did
seem
Russia
to happen
again.
Rather said.
See, that was astrological. So these things implode upon themselves if they aren't really organically based on harmony. If a structure is based on something that's not balanced, like the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, well, you can temporarily sustain that, but that's eventually going to collapse, as history has told us over and over and over.
Yeah,
and when we're in the middle of these perfect storms, we often don't quite realize that, you know, when we live our mundane, unaware, everyday lives, I can guarantee you people in the middle of the fall of Rome didn't know Rome was falling. And I'll bet you most people in the middle of the Renaissance didn't know the Renaissance was happening.
Well, you don't always feel the current when you're in it because it becomes an ambient motion. You're part
right.
of it. And it's only when you have a relativity of something moving faster or something moving slower at the same time, or you're looking outside looking in, inside looking out. But you're in a big society. You don't know the tide is slowly rising or falling. That's why Terence McKenna, I heard him say one time, whoever discovered water, it certainly wasn't a fish.
Exactly. That's brilliant. But you see, here's the new rules to the game. We never have been connected, in recorded history at least, as we are connected now through communication devices such as
yes.
the internet, cell phones, and all of these things. Look at us. We're talking hundreds of miles away through a satellite, and thousands of people are listening to us. Well, that's just a wonder among wonders to someone back in the 1900.
And we're traveling less physically with people who are working with virtual media and, you
yes.
know, logging into their jobs and so forth, and yet we are traveling more through the global network of communications. So our global network of communications is extending us out in the social networks, and yet when you ride a subway, you're going to find a person next to you going inward because they've got their smartphone, they're typing something on it while listening to headphones.
Yeah. Well, look at publishing. Look at all these Kindle things and everything. I'm the most untechnologically gifted person on the planet. I'm trying. But I look at all of these people, and I said, everybody's wired up no matter where they are.
Yep,
so it's extraordinary.
Yep.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah. Wired up and reaching out while going inward to do so.
Yeah. But on the one hand, with all this virtual connection and, you know, webinars and corporate meetings via the internet, look at all the oil you're saving.
Yes, that's
and
right.
when we start publishing things on Kindle, well, it's not like a beautiful, wonderful book in your hand, but on the other hand, look at the trees you're saving.
That's right.
So there's always, you know, a trade-off with everything. You just have to understand what they are.
Now, with this kind of influence, with the rise of intellectualism and everything like that, does this speak well for the Orient? Is that why we see these influences bringing the rise of China? And second part of this question, I'm not going to ask you to make predictions, but what are the tendencies for the United States as we move forward, and what are the watch fors that you might have for the United States as we go on?
Well, if you're trying to balance two things, and one is very high and one is very low, the lower one, in terms of economy or whatever, or political power, has to come up, and the one that's really, really high and dominant has to come down, doesn't it?
Conservation of energy.
Balance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So Asia, all the Asian societies are much older than the Western societies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So consequently, they are having cycles even more powerful than ours by a couple of thousands of years at least. And so what you're seeing now is that cyclical timing is going to bring Asia up into world prominence and dominance more, and consequently, to balance that out, the West is going to come down in terms of its power to dictate to the rest of the world.
It's amazing what you're saying, because these are the very predictions that I've been making, not looking at astrology at all, but by looking at the internal rhythms of the United States and of the world. And we're coming up with the same conclusions.
Sure.
So it must be that the internal rhythms that I've observed in nations are ultimately have their durations influenced by the heavenly bodies around us. Now, I'll give you a great example. When you look at biorhythms, biorhythms was the source of how I got started in cycles to begin with. And we have a 23-day physical cycle internally from birth. We have a 28-day emotional cycle within us from birth, and a 33-day intellectual cycle, excuse me. So when you look at the 28-day emotional cycle, that coincides closely with the month. And does a woman's menstrual cycle coincide closely with the lunar month? So it's not these are internal rhythms. They do have periodicity. They do run like clockwork. They are set from the day that you're born. But why do we have the durations that we do? It seems that the durations that are internal have its timing due to things that are external. So when I see the rhythms of a nation and the rhythms of the global community moving so many hundreds of years long and being in this position at that time, I'm looking in and seeing what was influenced from without.
Well, time is relative. And there's an organic nature to the universe, I'm convinced, and there is an energetic connection on many levels. I mean, just talking about the women's menstrual cycles, that's also connected with the moon. And guess how long the moon takes to go around the chart? 28 and a half days. So it's absolutely an organic thing. So when you have Uranus, which wants to innovate. Now, Uranus has not been in Aries since the 1929 stock market crash, and it just went in last year. It's going to be there for 7 years, all right? So you're going to have the fallout of all of that stuff. Look at the mutation politically of having Obama have the opportunity to become president. Can you imagine that 84 years ago? Excuse me.
No, that wouldn't have happened. Even when I was born in the 1950s, I mean, in a lot of towns, man would say, a black man would say to a white woman, excuse me, you dropped your purse, man. He could be in trouble. And now, you know, these injustices have waned within a single lifetime. So there's something huge moving that.
Well, remember, Uranus rules Aquarius, and Aquarius is seeking equality. And so we're going to have that now for 2,300 years. But this is just the first fireworks of the opening display. Really what we're going to, think of it this way, all those that are listening. What's really happening now, you know how when you watch the Olympic opening ceremonies, what happens? You have 15 minutes of the most extraordinary fireworks. And that's what's happening right now, economically, politically, culturally. Spiritually, religion, look at how religion, the status quo is on its deathbed, having its last hurrah, digging its heels in. It's a losing battle. It's not going to win.
Yeah, we are in a great transformation right now, and we're moving into things that are new, what I call the first quarter of a cycle, which is new beginnings. And that's where we're definitely headed into there. Moni, how would you advise people who want to understand, you know, people who are not as versed as you are and experienced as you are, and they are listening to this broadcast, they want to learn a little bit more and just get a basic understanding to find out how deep they want to go into it. And I think all of us should have at least a basic understanding. Where would you advise a person to direct their eyes and ears to pick up a little bit about this?
Well, here's my authentic answer. After 46 years of doing this, I really have come to the conclusion, and I didn't always understand this, that mythology is the language of astrology. No matter what culture it comes from, mythology gives you why. Uranus is all about starting things. Uranus starts things very well, doesn't finish them very well, but starts things.
Yeah.
So other planets have to come over and sort of finish things up. So when you want to just understand the basics, look and get some of these wonderful books that are out. There's lots and lots of books about astrology and mythology that give you the language so that you see if Mars is going through your house of, let's say, income, all right?
Yes.
Well, Mars wants to pioneer. Mars wants to energize. Now, will you use the energy well? Will you pioneer wisely? Will you quit your job just to go out on a sense of adventure, uninformed, half-cocked? That's the danger in the lower octave of Mars. But
yeah.
if you use Mars in balance with some of the other planets, you see, your chart is made up of three elements. Planets are like characters in the play.
That's
the
a good way of thinking
they
about
are
it.
In.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. I want to anchor this as we go along, because
sure.
you mentioned this before. The planets are like characters in the field. They're like characters on the play. Now,
yeah.
the signs,
sign that they're in is the backdrop and scenery of the play.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep going around on the merry-go-round, and different planets are in different speeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they change signs very often, you see.
Is it going to be like an orchestra? Because if you know that the woodwind's over here, the Tiffany's over here, the brass is over here, the strings is over here.
Yes. yes, it is.
And yet we can hear them all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
So you, if
and
you
yet
understand
they each, have their
each
job
one,
to do.
You learn one planet at a time, and you begin to understand that they all have universal properties because all of them
mm-hmm.
are going through the same signs. They just
mm-hmm.
go through it at different speeds.
Yeah.
And
so,
while the
yes.
different characters go through the same signs, they have
mm-hmm.
they are different characters influencing different things. So if you have this character in that sign, it's going to influence you maybe mentally one way. And if you
mm-hmm.
And if you have this one, it'll influence you. Like Mercury goes in this sign, it's going to hit you mentally. Venus goes in this sign, it's going to hit you emotionally. Saturn goes in that sign, it's going to hit you
mm-hmm.
physically. Am I being too simple with this?
No, you're absolutely, completely correct.
Okay, so you got
simply,
this influence on it, that character. All right.
Yeah, and it gives you the sense of timing of when those planets in your chart are touching your natal planets. Your birth chart is like a still shot, a snapshot. The moving planets of today are like a moving, you know, video that's action, and it's moving around, and they're triggering the planets in your natal chart. So it's the timing. So to use your orchestra analogy, let's say you play the cymbals, and you can crash those cymbals like someone at the New York Philharmonic. And let's say you execute a perfect, wonderful cymbal crash too soon. You've
Uh-oh.
Just ruined the symphony.
Yes.
Or if you forget to come in, you've missed your opportunity. Mm-hmm.
But all things have perfect balance, and mathematics and music rule the universe. And tell me
Definitely.
What you mean by your planets. That's determined by when you're born.
Yeah. So horoscope is a Greek word that means, quite simply, picture of the sky, picture of the hour. It means picture of the hour. So your horoscope or your natal birth chart is a picture of the sky the moment you were born as seen from where you were born. That's why it's very important to have the location of a client's chart. So
yes.
two babies born at the same exact moment in time, but one in Paris and one in Shanghai, their planets will all be in the same signs, but the rising sign or ascendant will be different and the house order will be different because it's a different perspective of the heavens, you see?
Yes, yes. And, you know, I had Dr. Paul Halpern, an astronomer, on the program, and he asked the profound question, where is the center of the observable universe?
Yeah, we haven't found it yet.
Well, we haven't found the center of the universe, and that's what we were saying. I actually went and heard him say a live talk before I invited him on this program, and he kind of befuddled us, and then he gave us the very obvious answer that none of us got. He said, where is the center of the observable universe?
Ah.
Right here. It's where
you
are.
Yes, it's you. Mm-hmm. That's why when you look at your chart, if you've ever seen a horoscope, the center of it is a big empty circle in the middle with all the planets around it.
Yes.
You live in the center of that circle. And all those planets and houses and areas of your chart are expressions of your center. And we make the mistake of thinking because we have a whole bunch of planets or because the sun is in a certain sign that that's what we are. No, that's an expression coming through us. That's the universe, and we're the filter.
Okay, so we understand our natal chart, we understand the characters running through the fields, and we understand what the aspects are and how they influence us, and all these beautiful layers of
mm-hmm.
rhythms within rhythms going around like that. But once you become familiar with the elements that are in
mm-hmm.
play, it's like the kaleidoscope example. You're only going to have a small handful of pebbles in that kaleidoscope, giving you a myriad of patterns as you turn it. So from simplicity comes complexity, but you break it down and make it so that we can understand the simple elements because they're familiar to you.
Yeah, there's nothing like experience.
Now, do you? What else do you do besides the radio program, Monty? Are you doing consultations with people? Are you doing?
Oh yes, I have a large client base. Some now this newfangled Skype thing is there, so I'm having to learn to do that. But I have an office here in New York, and I have a lot of clients, you know, from the tri-state area that do come in. I do really love best giving readings in person. There's just something about the connection. But, yeah, they can reach me, you know, through MontyTaylor.com, Monty@MontyTaylor.com, and I do telephone readings, and, you know, I can, that's what I do there. But I really see myself as an educator, and I try to make my radio show and my lectures all about empowering people on how to use astrology rather than giving their power away to a speaker to tell them what to do. So I'm on the board of the Enlightenment Society at the United Nations, and we hire speakers. We just did, in fact, last year, an astrology conference where I had leading exponents of Vedic astrology, Celtic astrology, Aztec astrology, Chinese astrology, all on a panel talking about how their systems worked, and it was astounding how they all said the same thing, you see. So I do that. And yes. I'm very much into cultural events. I'm working on a project now. I'm very much into sharing the knowledge that Carl Jung left us, the great psychologist, about how to use the wisdom of the myths. And so I'm starting a series of audio books and, you know, internet television programs exactly on these subjects. So I really see myself first and foremost as an educator and a communicator of this information to make it available to people in a way that they can use it, you know.
Well, folks, whenever you listen to this archive, because we get a great many of our listens post-production, because people like to listen to the show at flex time, just go to MontyTaylor.com and find out what's happening now, because the now is ever-changing. The future is just a bunch of strings of now. You know, Armani, I wanted to ask you a question about that UN Council thing where you had all these different forms of astrology, you know, from Aztec to Vedic and everything else. Was that recorded? Is this presentation available anywhere?
No, we didn't. You know, the UN is such a complicated place, but sometimes we do record them, but we just didn't have the manpower at the time. But when we're doing something really worthwhile, we're getting better and better. Now the technology makes it easier to bring in a video camera and whatever, and then getting someone to put in the... See, none of us are paid at the UN. We have to do this voluntarily. So it's getting the resources together to do it, but, you know, they're not. But... you'll find a lot of this stuff, though, on the archives of my show, TalkingAlternative.com, Living Consciously with Monty Taylor. And if people really want to have some customized, if they want to be on the list of, I send out a weekly newsletter, and if you want to contact me through my website, I will put you on the newsletter, and it gives you the highlights of what we're going to be doing every week. And then, of course, the show is archived, too, like yours, so they can listen to it when they wish. So that's one way we can try to share some of the information.
Monty, you've been telling us the story of us all over time. You said a fascinating thing, that individuals will have charts, but you've observed that a company can have a chart. Now, if you were going to look at, say, Coca-Cola, just to pick a familiar name, would you look at the time that that company began and do a natal chart just like a person?
Yes, absolutely.
That's
you get
phenomenal.
The date and you get the date of incorporation, and you can then. I have this a lot. I have an awful lot of. I'm so amused. I'm not a financial person. I'm just a common sense person. And I have all of these big Wall Street executives that come to me. And here's something that's a tribute to astrology. They don't know each other, and yet they all call me within 48 hours of each other. But the interesting thing is, what very often I will do with them, they're saying, should I make a job move or whatever? I said, well, get me the date of incorporation of the company you're thinking of going to or the one you're working for now, and you can put them around each other just like you can do a husband and wife or, you know, a compatibility chart with two people, and you can see how compatible the individual is with the company and vice versa.
Well, you know, Monty, I've noticed, let's bring this up to the national level. I think you pretty much answered my question, but sometimes I make things a little bit simple, then I can get it, and I know if I get it, then all of my listeners can get it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And let's bring it up to the level of the country. What I've noticed is that in my lifetime, the trade between us and Japan was such that when we're doing really well overall economically, Japan is not doing as well. Go back to the 1960s, we were doing very well, and they were just trying to bring low-quality imports into the United States, and made in Japan was not necessarily a sign of excellence. And then by the 1980s, we were aggressively seeking out those products, those automobiles, because of the precision, the engineering, the excellence.
Right.
And they bought Rockefeller Center. They're going up and we're going down. And then in the 90s, that started to reverse. Now, is this because we would take the natal chart of the United States, the natal chart of Japan, and there are two different dates, so we're just not necessarily having, even if we have the same high and low tides, they're not occurring at the same time?
Absolutely. It's like two children on a seesaw. One is up and one is down. And it's very often this is the case with the Eastern and Western Hemisphere, because they are on either sides of the zodiac. So the same moment in time is going to have a different expression. Also, when you're looking at a country like Japan, what do you use as the natal chart of the country? You would now use the reconstruction of Japan after World War II. That is what you would use as the new birth chart for Japan.
I have often wondered that. Thank you.
Yeah,
I wondered that about
it
in the terms of colorithms.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, certain countries like Italy, I give up. I don't know what chart to use for them. They have a new government every time you turn around. You know, many countries are that way. But then that's also in their natal chart that they will do that.
Yeah, and England isn't real easy to grab a beginning on either.
Now,
if you take South America,
it's very vague.
Mm-hmm. South America, you know, I mean, from, you know, the turn of the 19th century, all these countries were succeeding from Spain and Portugal. It's very clear. Hey, there's a question there. We've been talking about the shifts between East and West. Foundation for the Study of Cycles tells us that that happens about every 500 years. I'm claiming it's every 528 years. What about between North and South? Is there a cyclical shift of power and energy there?
Not as much as there would be between East and West, because you're dealing with longitude. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with longitude latitude rather than longitude. Longitude, a big difference in longitude, north to south, will give you a big contrast in the charts involved. For example, if you're born in New York and you move to the Philippines,
yes,
that's a big longitudinal change. Now, that's an important thing people must understand. When they relocate, they should have a professional relocate their birth chart to see how they're going to do in that new location.
Huh.
It does not replace your natal chart, but you add it over like a filter. And so I do this a lot with people. Mm-hmm.
Some people feel very much at home in the places that they visited for the first time, and other people feel out of place when they think everything should be right.
Sure, because it shifts planets around in the natal position in their chart. Mm-hmm.
So we have to think about where and when at the same time. And our linear thought in the machine age really hasn't been teaching us to think that way. But we're beginning to get a little more coordinated. We're moving away from Cartesian thought of absolutes. We're moving away from Newtonian thought of thinking of a mechanical universe. Now we're in the quantum fields. Things have a tendency to exist at certain times. And that's fine. We're finding that true not just on the physical manifestations of creation, but in every aspect influencing our lives, including the zodiac. And our minds are adapting to this a little bit more. So I think that we're getting ready to understand these subtleties and nuances, because they won't cause us to differentiate beyond our comfort zone, because we're going to have more emotional intelligence and be able to recognize. I said, let's not forget what Ram Dass said, the theory of aha.
Mm-hmm.
And we got that. We got to have that aha in our lives to get it, and then we can learn all of these the complex things that you're telling us, and it won't be like ticker tape, laborious trying to conceive this through the portal of our left brains.
Sure. And all these things, again, that we're talking about really don't cause the events in your life to happen. They cause conditions to arise that cause you or force you to use your free will. That's really what astrology does.
That mm-hmm. is amazing. So here we are living in a world of cycles within cycles. We can understand that we have cycles in our bodies, cycles mm-hmm. in our corporations, our countries, the world global community on a planet that itself is moving in cycles with relative to positions of the other bodies in the solar system moving mm-hmm. around us too, moving not only in hundreds of years, thousands of years, all the way up to the hundreds of thousands of years of the yugas and the age of Brahman, which some people say is millions of years. Some people say that is 432 million years. Now, how mm-hmm. could anybody in ancient times understand that? It must have been that they realized the relative positions. You know, when you think of the zodiac, they call it the great year. Wait, year? A year is 365 days. Yes, but when you're looking at 26,000 years, we call it a year because it has four quarters. It has seasons, yeah. just like our tropical year, and because it has 12 divisions in it, and that's why we modeled our month of the year. So it's really a fractal relationship. We didn't invent the word in the West until 1970 by Bruno, uh-huh. a mathematician. But when they understood that, you look at the Mayan calendar between the Dzogchen, the 52-year calendar round combined uh-huh. with the Ab, and then you start getting into that. Not the long count that ended last year. That's a linear count. But the cyclical calendars that they used in their everyday lives, they're fractal. You had 13-day weeks. You had 13-year periods. You had 260-day Dzogchens. You had 260-year periods. And they were constantly doing a fractal relationship. So when you have that understanding that there's a transdimensional recurrence, then you can understand how back in the times of Sanskrit that they were figuring out not only that these things were happening on a greater scale, but they were actually coming up with durations. Because they not only understood that things change, repeat themselves on different scales of size and time, they had come up with the formulas by which they replicate on greater and lesser scales of size and time.
And that's what we've lost, because back in those days when they came up with that, they had not yet divorced themselves from intuition.
Yes. And then, mm-hmm. after they did, they had their intelligence impeded by education.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I have a wonderful saying. You know, most people think they're educated. They're really just indoctrinated. So.
But you said a wonderful thing, and it's my first time for hearing this. You said any virtue done to excess is a vice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, the overdevelopment of any virtue can become a vice.
Mm-hmm. And we should remember in this transitional time, these things that we're saying, well, it's too much of it, they actually are and have been virtues. You know, the linear thinking, the left brain thinking, the mm-hmm. empirical thought. This has led to brilliant discoveries and corrections of some mistakes and so forth. But I see what you're saying. We've been doing it for so long. In the conservation of energy that you've alluded to here, that we're doing it at the expense of other things, and we've doing it for so long that it's time to shift, and guess what? Astrology is telling us that time is now.
Absolutely it is. You know, you can put that concept on the microcosm. Let's put it in the most daily suburban housewife's reality, because what we're talking about, they say, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Well, let's say you're an immaculate housekeeper. And if you overdevelop your housekeeping skills to the point that nobody is comfortable visiting you because they might put something up, you have turned your virtue into a vice, you see?
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And we become so dependent on machines that we're not as physically strong. We're
right.
overweight because, you know, we have a gadget that does everything. We have automobiles mm-hmm. that instead of walking when we could walk, you know, and... So, yes, absolutely true, and the time has changed. And I'm just amazed at how many parallels there are between the things I've observed, not with astrology, and what you're saying is happening, where we are going with the influence of astrology. So it's all interconnected. Absolutely.
It totally is. Astrology is reflecting it back. Astrology is like a train schedule. If you're supposed to be in Philadelphia at 10 minutes past 3, and you look at your watch and your train schedule says you're going to be in Philadelphia. Did the train schedule cause Philadelphia to suddenly appear outside your train window?
No. So we have to see ourselves in the picture, and we have to realize that we ourselves are in motion. There's a wonderful word I came across when I was reading up a little bit on this. It's called parallax, and very simply put, parallax is the apparent motion of one body in the heavens when viewed from another body in the heavens. That's why we see retrograde in the planets. It looks like it's going backwards. But it's not going backwards. It looks that way because they're in motion and we are. But if we understand that that parallax that we can understand with that example is something that we must also see in the situations of our lives, not only of what's happening, but when things are happening and where they are happening are all adding to our parallax.
Yeah. Well, the parallax of a retrograde planet, a planet looks like it's going retrograde or backwards. It's not really. But astrologically, when it looks like it's going backward, for example, Mercury has been retrograde for 3 weeks. It'll go direct on St. Patrick's Day for all you listeners. But you're not supposed to sign contracts or do things because planets are not working in a foundational way. When a planet's retrograde, you're supposed to put the prefix re in front of any word, review, reevaluate, research. And then take your action when the planet goes direct. And all planets go retrograde every year.
Wow, it's good for us to remember. You need all four seasons. There's a time to plant. There's a time to harvest. There's a time to look back on what you've done.
Sure.
And so we only know what season it is, and we can learn that because all of the things making the seasons are recurring with mathematical precision, but there's more than one influence at time. It's a confluence.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Monty, you've been telling us a lot about the world, the nations, the companies, and we're in. I want to ask a question about you, Monty. You have been doing this par excellence, eventually, over 40 years. I've heard a lot of astrologers. You're truly one of the more understandable and one of the more experienced that I know. Don't blush.
Well, thank
you. Don't wait. You can blush. Nobody's going to notice you're on the radio. however, what got you started on this? What's your story? Where did it come from?
Well, it's the strangest thing. Thank you for asking, David. I never set out to be an astrologer. I mean, what are you going to do? Put astrologer on a credit card application? Excuse me, you know. So I didn't set out to be an astrologer. Astrology used to be a much more integrated part of life.
I think we have a slight disconnect here.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing your voice right now.
Hello, testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. David, I think it's on your end. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Okay, David, we've lost you.
David, we've lost you. Shall I call you back? Well, of course you can't answer. Well, all you listeners, if you're still listening to me, my answer to that is when I was a teenager, I read some very advanced books on astrology, and I thought everybody could understand that. I didn't think it was anything different. Then I started understanding through a long journey of how to apply it and use it and just get deeper and deeper into it. But I was always interested in the fine arts. I was always fascinated by history and mythology and all the literature and everything. And so suddenly I realized that they were related. And really, I'm a teacher. So that's how that started. David, are we still on our show together here? Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up and call him back.
Monty, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
All right.
I just called you back.
Yes, and I believe, actually, I see that you did that, but one of our listeners Skyped to say that they never stopped hearing you. They stopped hearing me. What happened?
Oh, good. Well, I finished answering your question for them then.
Very good. Well, you know,
just
I'm going to have
assuming
to
that,
to
you know,
show.
Being on my own show, I knew I said, well, they might still be hearing me. So, great. Yes, I started astrology simply by fluke. I didn't plan to do it as a profession. I had the third largest, maybe, concert agency in New York for about 30 years. I managed a lot of people at Lincoln Center, Carnegie Hall. My passion was the performing arts, music, and culture. And however I ran my agency privately, using astrology. I knew which singer to put with which conductor when.
Yes.
And then when the classical music industry absolutely collapsed in 1994, and we lost 47 orchestras in the following 5 years, mm-hmm. everyone started coming to me to have astrological readings. And I said, that's ridiculous. That's my private gift. Then I realized that the United Nations called and asked would I do a lecture on it, and I said, well, I guess the universe is telling me something. So I took a second look at it and realized, well, I'm here to be an informational source and teacher and guide for astrology. Yes, I do enjoy helping people one-on-one. I do have a lot of clients in that regard, but that's how that happened.
My goodness. Now, how did you get involved with the United Nations, Monty?
In cultural events, you meet people, you know, and I would start talking about my interests and ask them about their interests and international people. And someone who was a volunteer on one of the adjunct, you know, cultural clubs at the United Nations asked if I would do a lecture there. Now, please, dear listeners, I was not speaking in the General Assembly or salaried by the United Nations. They have many, adjunct cultural small organizations, and this was one of them. It's called the Enlightenment Society, where they study higher philosophies from different cultures around the world. And so that's how I met some wonderful people there. And since I was an agent for 30 years of filling concert halls, I knew how to take a boardroom or a concert or a lecture hall and fill it with people and put an interesting subject on the stage. So I started volunteering. That's how that happened.
Well, let's put this to the test. We got a Skype in question from one of our listeners. It's from our dear friend Phyllis in Florida, who is associated with A Better World. Here's a question for you, Monty.
Yeah.
If the planets influence us, but they limit how much we can manifest through our intention slash manifest something into the quantum field. Or let me write it again. If the planets influence us, but do they then limit how much we can manifest through our intention slash manifest something into the quantum field?
Absolutely not. They give you the appropriate style for you to do it in and the optimum timing, you see. So if you're living in Massachusetts and you decide you want to go to the beach, I don't think January would be a very good time for it.
Right.
So that's really overly simplified, but that's the way it has. Like if someone wants to become a certain thing, I come and I say to people, I see how you love this particular thing. If you want to become, let's say, a photographer, and I can see a lot of talent for photography, but I also see a lot of handicaps about self-promotion and self-worth and things like that, I might tell this person, you should be balancing what you do. Use photography as an integral part of your life, but grow into it as a career. You see, for example, I'm doing a photo essay book on mythology with all these amazing models and everything. And I said, you know, before I hire all of these amazing photographers to do this project for me, I'm going to find out what makes a photograph valuable. And so I went to NYU Night School for a semester, and I took photography appraisal to understand. Yeah. So that's really what your chart would show you. And I was giving myself my own astrological advice. I said, I love the quality of photography. I don't know how to go out and ground it and make it marketable and make a book sell and things like that on photography, on other things maybe. So I went out and learned a lot, and then it all came together for me.
Well, that's amazing.
And I met some more interesting people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But no, you see, if you have certain astrological wiring, and it's only wiring, it doesn't prohibit you from doing things, but it can show you where your greatest assets lie. And isn't it easier to start building on those first before you tackle the challenges?
It certainly is, because sometimes we tend to be overly objective. We say we want to do this, we want to build that house on that hill, we want to have a career in this. And we just lay out a blueprint, and we tend to just have this abstract model in our mind without realizing that the obstacles are the course. And then along the way, we go, huh, that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, the most interesting thing for me that I've learned from astrology this year, I learn something all the time, is that a problem is nothing but a challenge being incorrectly met.
Well, could you repeat that, please? I want to hear
problem,
that again.
A problem is nothing but a challenge being incorrectly met.
I love those words. Where do they come from?
They come from astrology.
Wow.
Good astrologers know that you have to use certain words with certain planets, and you have to use certain words with certain signs. So when you see a planet in a sign, you have to take words from both of those lists and combine them, and it'll give you insight.
Wow. We could only learn to think like that. You know, we have to have new thought. What did Einstein say? You cannot find a solution to a problem using the same thinking that got you into the problem.
And that is the myth of Chiron, and Chiron is a planet that shows you you can't fight negativity on its own level. You will only empower it. You have to go to a higher level. You must. If you have any problem in your life, you cannot solve it on the same level of consciousness you had when you noticed you had the problem.
Speaking of the inner outer planets here, we're getting into the last 5 minutes of the program here, last 4 minutes, but one quick question. Now that we've discovered that Pluto is one of many bodies in the Kuiper Belt, and not even the largest one, are we looking at the other body of the belt or the belt itself as a influence? We are. Okay, so we're expanding our consciousness. You know, we're ready. So we're the student who's ready and the master is appearing because we're seeing it.
Right. Now, everyone has to be patient because all of these heavenly bodies don't suddenly exactly reveal themselves through the myth right away. You have to observe them for a while, sometimes decades, before you really get what they're doing. So I think a lot of people are putting premature interpretations on some of these bodies, but definitely the Kuiper Belt and the fixed stars in other galaxies are starting to influence us.
And we've got the lesser planets now. Now that we went through the ordeal of defining what is a full-size planet, what is a lesser planet, and so forth.
Size has nothing to do with it.
Well, there you are, you know. And so it's where you are in the cycles, the river's course of life. We're learning how to navigate the tides of time. We've got to remember the kaleidoscope example that Monty told us, that within a few pebbles inside a kaleidoscope, as it turns, it gives you this myriad and myriads of patterns that are so complex, but the elements themselves are very simple.
Yes.
And the planets are like characters going through the signs. The signs are the different stages, the different fields.
The signs are the stage, the scenery on the stage.
The scenery on the stage. And we are, all men and women on Earth, are but players upon it. So with all of these complex things happening, yet the fact that they come from simple elements themselves, we have some sort of realization that everything around us is endless in its complexity, and yet we are part of it and we can understand it. And our self-realization, we're going to learn to recognize the things around us as they influence us because we are them.
Right.
We are them. Well, Monty Taylor, wow, this has been a very enlightening talk, and you've brought to us a lot of thoughts of Jungian astrology, mythology, a perspective on where we are, where we're going, and how we've perceived all of that over the ages. Folks, you can find out more about this and the ongoing activities that Monty is always doing by going to montytaylor.com. I thank you all for tuning in to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, and we're going to be signing off. Monty, do you have any departing words for us as we leave?
Well, if you do go to my website, please send me a brief email so that I can get back to you, because the website's always under construction. So I can put you on my mailing list to do anything that you like, or if I can be of any help, I'm more than happy. But this has been a joy, and your work just mirrors what the universe is telling us, David, so thank you for having me on.
The concurrencies are rather amazing, and I'm learning more how they are similar. And MontyTaylor.com, there's so many things to read there and find out, so go there, folks, and find it out. Thank you, David Katzmeier from the Cycles of Change, signing out for tonight's show. See you again next week.